The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And today I am joined by, a celebrity, one of the largest Burgundy producers, if not the largest Burgundy producer, making wine in Canada, the United States, Jean-Charles Boissette. Jean, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Bonjour, Matt, and thank you immensely for having us. It's a privilege and exciting to be back in marvelous Toronto.
The privilege is all mine. And before anything else, I was going over all these interviews with you, and I'm trying to, I found this one description describing you, Jean. He is a bit like an elegant Willy Wonka of Napa Valley with his outrageous but refined style. Would that description, would that fit you at all? Would that be partially right?
It's a great
right?
honor. I love the analogy to chocolate and Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
Because it's taking people on a journey. And what I love to do is obviously make sure that every one of our guests dream wine, feel wine, sense wine, and escape in wine and have wine allow to get to know themselves better.
Yeah.
And that's always been my objective in life.
Well, it seems talking to a lot of winery owners and winemakers that wine is a story, that one of the most important things about the wine you're drinking is the story behind it. And there's so much I want to get to your story. But first, could you tell us why we're in the beautiful, one of the beautiful tasting rooms here at the LCBO in Summerhill?
Exactly. Maybe just a comment on what you just said.
Yeah, yeah, go.
Wine is the catalyst, as you said, to any story. Mm-hmm. You're going to taste wine. You're going to be with someone you enjoy, someone you just meet. And suddenly wine allows you to trigger any discussion you can imagine on the planet. If he's an architect, a lawyer, a doctor, a machine operator, he's a foreigner, wherever someone is from, wine brings stories out and allows to get to know people. So I use wine, loving people so much, to help me to get to know someone as well. So
yeah,
wine is the storyteller.
It is true. It's the catalyst. And you know, rarely do you drink wine where there isn't some story behind it. We're near New Year's. My favorite moment was, the night one of the nicest whites. I had this Premier Cru Corton, and I had it. We made a fire outside on one of the coldest days in Ontario. But I remember that moment partially because it was beautiful, but partially because of the wine that I was drinking.
And maybe the person you were with.
I was with my my girlfriend, Amy, at the time, who also appreciated it. Tell me first what we're,
so
we're doing
here. Toronto, we're so excited because this is the first time we're releasing our spirits all the way from Burgundy. So it's very unique, and I hope we'll get to talk about that as well. And we're releasing our sparkling wine from Burgundy as well. So it's a big Burgundy day, where Burgundy meets California. Why California? Because we have a few wines as well today we're presenting of JCB from Napa Valley.
Yeah.
So the spirits are very unique. It's basically an incredible story of, you know, the love of the ingredients. And whenever you suggest, we'll talk more about it. Mm-hmm. But the wine you're having in your glasses.
Yeah, I have the sparkling right now.
Number 69.
Yes, yes.
Is there any better number in the world?
It's up there. Yeah. I would put it in the top three of the best numbers out
excellent,
there.
Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent.
It's very divisible. 23 times 3 is 69. Absolutely. Very versatile number.
Yes, indeed. Indeed, indeed. And you know what I love about 69? It's 100% Pinot Noir. 15 months of aging. Very thin bubbles. Very delicate touch. And you know, the bubbles are very luminous. Very dazzling. And I find them literally dancing in your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the JCB 69, which carries, of course, sadly, Matt, my date of birth.
Oh.
69.
I'm 75, so we're not really that far
well,
off.
You're looking so young for 75.
Thank you. Right back at you. You mentioned spirits. When I think of spirits, when I think of, you know, vodka or rum or and just any sort of spirit, I don't Burgundy never comes to mind. Sparkling comes to mind. Chardonnay comes to mind. Pinot Noir comes to mind. But spirits doesn't come to mind. Tell the listeners a little bit about just
about
that project.
I totally agree with you. And it never came to my mind till I saw how exciting was what was happening in spirits. And to the moment that I started to taste a lot of spirits and I realized I want to focus on the ingredients. I want to focus on what do I have in my glass that is so unique. So I started with our master distiller, Rashid, to play with grapes. And I said, instead of doing potato distilled or beets distilled or grain distilled, I said, I'm from Burgundy. What is the best in Burgundy? Pinot Noir and Chardonnay.
Yeah.
Why don't we play and distill the finest of the finest? Let's go to the top.
Yeah.
There's nothing better than those two grape variety.
Not that. Those grapes are done best where you made your bones.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, you know, on my right arm flows Pinot Noir. On my left flows Chardonnay. So we basically made wine and then distill wine, which makes it so unique because, you know, no one has ever distilled anything from Burgundy. The goal, softness, elegance, a very suave, charismatic feel, a very unctuous, rich mouthfeel that is second to none. We want the actual vodka and the gin to envelop your palate as a French kiss, never invade it, never bring too much alcohol, but just elegance, finesse, and ultimately eloquence.
Okay, we're then going to go off topic for a bit. I had all these questions for you, but I want to talk about spirits for a second. Those are not usually the adjectives we use to describe. Like when I think of vodka, you know, I don't think of elegance. You know, I think of something that's just been distilled to have very little true flavor or character. So I have to say, those are not the adjectives I usually hear to describe the spirits you're talking about.
Well, and I'm so glad to hear that because this is really what we wanted to achieve.
And look at this bottle. And I shouldn't say look at this bottle on a podcast. Bad pod by me. But this is a beautiful looking, like the container, the vessel that you are using for it, it looks fantastic. It looks like something out of...
a perfume bottle.
Yes, it looks like a high-end perfume bottle.
And an 18th century decanter. The whole idea we had... Let's create an amazing bottle shape that after you finish the bottle, you keep the memory forever.
Yeah.
And you keep it with yourself and you reuse it. So you could use it for water, wine, obviously anything you have in the house, you could keep in your fridge. Or if you love whiskey or anything else, you could use it to age anything you want.
Well, that certainly goes with your philosophy with wine, a biodynamic, organic,
correct,
about treating the earth correctly, about being able to reuse something over and over again.
And I'm accumulating with so many at my house. I've built a great display as a background behind the bar, and it looks stunning. So the whole idea is, Matt, to do exactly what you did. So for all the listeners, Matt did the right thing. He looked at the visual and the beautiful richness of the liquid. Then he smelled it, which was great. So what did you think on the bouquet?
The bouquet, actually bouquet is the right word because I'm getting a little bit of flowers here.
Yep.
And I'm getting a little bit of flowers. I'm getting a bit of light stone fruit. Like I should not be using these descriptors for vodka.
I think you're doing great.
You know,
this is exactly what we dream.
Yeah, just a very floral, little bit of perfume, and a little more fruit profile than I mean, to me, when I think of vodka, and I don't drink a lot of high-end vodka all the time, so I'm not the best judge, but I think of neutrality when I think of vodka.
Yes.
When I smell this, when I taste this, I do not get neutrality. I get defined characteristics.
Exactly. And I think you're saying something so important. I don't believe in neutrality in anything.
Yeah.
Except maybe for peace. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you got to have an opinion. You got to take a position. You got to really voice who you are. And I wanted exactly what you describe, a beautiful nose, a great bouquet, great perfume in the tête, in the front.
Yeah.
A very good heart as you taste it, and a long-lasting finish.
It's still there. And also, I've never been the best spirits guy. I often describe myself as I'm in a good wine and bad beer. You know, I'll go from an old Grand Cru to Bud Light. That is, a lot of times my taste.
I think you drink a lot more Grand Cru than Bud Light, something tells me.
Oh, I wish. That would be fantastic. Then I'd be wildly broke. But, what I'm enjoying about this is it's a very pleasant finish. Like I've never thought of being the guy that drinks spirits on its own or just, you know, with maybe one ice cube. But that was damn good.
Thank you so
much. I got to say.
Well, and the beauty of it, it's the most luxurious to make, but at the same time, the longest to make. Because the pure takes us over 6 to 7 months to make. But you know what was fun is we wanted to go to the next level and we said, okay, we've made a pure, which is Chardonnay Pinot blend, then bottled by hand, only 4,000 bottles. What if we would go to the next level and go to the ocean and take the best of everything that is in the ocean, which for me is a sturgeon.
Yeah.
And what does the sturgeon give birth to?
Caviar.
Marvelous caviar.
Yeah.
And this is the beluga.
What?
Caviar.
What the hell you got going on? What is this sorcery? I need to, like, I have so many things I want to talk to you about. Drinking wine at seven, your grandparents. Also, it seems to me there's not a lot of French winemakers that embrace America as much as you do, which I want to get into.
For sure,
but
we will.
You have, what was this, caviar?
So this one is caviar. So we don't have to taste them all right now, or certainly with our listeners.
And I want to talk about your 69 as well, the sparkling. Yep. So on a second.
So the caviar is infused with beluga caviar mm-hmm. in the actual tank.
Yeah.
And I'm in love with this one because you could use it as oyster shooters.
Yep.
You could use it pure. I love it stir, not mm-hmm. shaken.
Yep.
Very similar to James Bond.
Indeed.
Of course. And then we made another one, which is called the truffle. Mm-hmm. So we go to the southwest of France, Périgord region. Mm-hmm. And what do?
Yep.
We basically infuse it with black truffle in the actual tank as well. And finally, just to finish on the spirit,
we created.
We created a gin.
Yeah.
Because life is all about gin. Mm-hmm. It's unique, it's complex. We have over 47 different plant variety in our gin, all the biodynamic plants, as well as organic plants as well. So the gin is very floral, very juniper based, mm-hmm. London dry gin, but with a lot of flavors into it, which I hope you try in a moment.
I would listen. I'm not going to say no to anything from your portfolio. I read this story. You were 7 years old, and you drank a 69 Clos de Vougeot and a 64 Balmain. What are you doing as a seven-year-old drinking wildly delicious Burgundy wine?
Well, that's a wonderful question that I need to thank my parents.
Yeah.
Because at home, my sister and I were the sommelier and serving mm-hmm. my parents' guests. And mm-hmm. we loved it because we could listen to the discussion, we could be part of the food, and we could certainly taste the wines.
Yeah.
So my mother did not finish her glasses. She never does. And I came after her. As she retreated to another room to serve dessert, I finished all the glasses. And I got to tell you, Matt, I fell in love with red wine.
You fell in love with red wine at the age of seven.
Yeah, it was a little late.
How Burgundy? Did you say how that was late?
I had a late start.
Burgundy
have
you?
Chardonnay, which is easy to do even when you're young. And then I had an epiphany moment, as you call it, mm-hmm. where I realized, God, this is so complex, so earthy, so ethereal at the same time. This is the emancipation of milk and fruit juice. I want to drink wine.
Yeah. I think we can all agree on that. Your grandparents, part of the French Resistance in the Second World War, and you talk about a lot in interviews about just the relationship that they had with Americans when, you know, Americans were helping France release from the tyranny of Germany. And that played a big part in your education in California and your love of California. I was wondering if you could talk about that for a little bit, because I find that the stereotypical profile of French winemaker is noses up when it comes to what's going on in Sonoma.
Absolutely. And the profile often of French winemakers is they know it all and they never venture anywhere else, which I think is the antithesis of who I am. Mm-hmm. And I was very fortunate. This is a little Blinis. Crème fraîche and caviar.
This is
something which will go very well with the caviar vodka we just had.
Oh, thank you.
Please, just bite into it. Let it melt in your mouth. Mm-hmm. Leanne made it with love and passion. So you're going to feel her energy into your mouth. Ooh la la.
Well, it's ridiculous.
Isn't it?
It's just both soft and just plenty of intense. Okay, this is bad pod. I am now chewing into the microphone. I apologize to the listener.
So my grandparents were those amazing people that allowed me to really discover the U.S. as well as my parents. And I came when I was very young. I was 10 and a half.
Yeah.
Fell in love with the country and fell in love really with the essence of what America is about, which Canada is totally part of. Mm-hmm. American way of life, the sense of freedom, the sense of entrepreneurship, that dynamism, that openness, that positiveness.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, I want to come back to the U.S. in the future and really be part of the U.S. landscape. So we toured that day. The winery you're just looking at over there is Buena Vista Winery.
Yeah.
Buena Vista is the oldest California winery. It was our last visit of a 10-day trip where we discovered the missions and we discovered the museums, but never really wineries. I fell in love with Buena Vista. And my grandmother bought some wine. We tasted those wines. I love the exoticism and, you know, the spirits of the wines. So my dream was eventually one day to buy this winery.
Yeah.
Which finally we did 7 years ago.
I know. Congratulations for that.
And well, when you have a dream, as you know, Matt, yeah, you follow it. And you go through it every 6 months and say, am I still aligned with my dream? And how am I going to achieve my dreams? So this has been really the most exciting journey for me.
And I'm going to, as I said, I've got all these questions. I'm going to bounce all around.
Please do.
Some quotes that you've said, talking about Raymond, about Buena Vista, is we thought it was very important to keep this American tradition. I'm a huge, and this is another quote, I'm a huge fan of American history, a huge fan of American lifestyle. That's why I'm living here. And I find that just interesting. You have a strong desire. It's not just you came here for an adventure or to learn or to make money or to make wine, but also almost seems to preserve and maintain the honor of the American wine tradition and American history.
Well said.
Again, that is wildly rare for people that grew up drinking Grand Cru Burgundy before 10.
That's very true. It's quite unusual, and I have this admiration and affection and attraction for Northern America at large. And I want to include Ontario in that because I have the feeling to be in another state or to be part of Northern America. Let's not forget, it started here rather than there. So I've always loved it, and I feel energized when I'm in the U.S., and I feel very much empowered to make a difference and to be part of that landscape and to be part of that energy. So this is why I came and stayed and wanting to really make sure we all know about the tradition and the history. This is why the Buena Vista wines, as an example that you're looking at right now, that beautiful Cabernet bottle, is preserving the history. You see, this is the first two building on the label of California winemaking, the first gravity flow building in the history. And we reintroduced that label that had been developed in 1861. So we preserve again the tradition and the history. And we talk about it, which is so important, is to really talk about how great history is, even though it's a short one, how fantastic it is.
You mentioned Ontario. I'm curious if, and we'll get a little wine geeky here, just on terms of the Vitti and the Vinny. What are the biggest if you could say the number one challenge about working in Ontario versus Sonoma versus Burgundy versus, say, Beaujolais, like just what are some of the unique challenges you as a winemaker faces in incredibly different geographical locations?
Well, as you make wine in different regions, you need to adapt and adapt, obviously, to the soil, the weather condition, and the plants and its expression in each, which we call the terroir. That's the terroir definition, that trinomial relationship. I think the hardest here may be the weather conditions. Soils are great. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the latitude is wonderful. The plant is easy because we have an amazing selection of great plants to plant. So I would say the biggest challenge of making wine in Ontario or in Canada at large are the weather conditions. You know, it could be very rainy and warm. It could be very humid and cold. So, you know, you have all the weathers throughout the 365 days. California is very consistent.
Yeah.
You know, and Burgundy is consistent within the seasons as well. Here we could be in between that consistency, which is not as easy maybe for grapes. It could be sometimes easier for apples and other fruits or vegetables, but they still make great wines here. So I'm very proud of that.
And what is your relationship just with the Ontario wine in terms of your imprint here in Southern Ontario?
Well, we used to be very involved.
And by the way, get your phone, don't worry, whatever you got to do.
We used to be very involved with a great winery that we created from scratch that we sold back to Constellation, was Clos Jordan.
Yes.
So of course we were very involved in that, and we created the standards for organic and biodynamic wines and a great Chardonnay and Pinot. That was our first entry here. So I think, you know, I'm very admirative of all the people making wine here. I would love one day eventually to be back. Today, our relationship is really promoting all our great spirits,
yeah,
sparkling wines, and obviously great wines from Burgundy and California into the province.
I think you're pretty busy. Like, to now start up another winery in Ontario or BC, you're fairly busy as it is. As I mentioned, we're going to be bouncing back and forth, and because I want to talk a little bit more about just biodynamic and what it means to you. But I, as you were answering, I slipped a little bit of the caviar, your caviar distilled vodka.
And you must have another. All right. Of those beautiful blinis.
Well, okay, if I must. I mean, I didn't want to.
This is Canadian caviar, you know. I'm very impressed with it, coming all the way from the east of your beautiful nation. And the caviar is nice and gentle and nutty and, you know, very rich and oily. I think it's a beautiful caviar.
What's the alcohol on the...
40%.
Okay, that's because it has none of the burn as I go down the throat. And... you know, when you're like a 14-year-old and the first time you get drunk, you just go into your parents' liquor cabinet. This is not you. You were drinking Grand Cru Burgundy. For the rest of us,
and
so
I started 7 years before.
Yeah, I know. I'm well aware of that. And we were stuck with bad vodka, and it would always burn the throat.
That's it.
This the exact opposite.
Well, we want that, your beautiful palate, mm-hmm. your professional palate, just to enjoy the best. And now, as we went to the ocean, where shall we go? Back on Earth, mm-hmm. southwest of France, the Dordogne region, and the beautiful grapes of Burgundy married with the incredible black truffle of the southwest. So we actually harvest truffle.
Yeah.
30 days ago, 60 kilos were coming to the winery and the distillery, and we infuse it in the tank and then very lightly filtered it, and then it becomes this amazing, incredible drink.
How important, and I'm gonna stretch this question out for a second because you're having one of the delicious caviar. And by the way, thank you. One of your earlier answers, you gave a great long answer as you were watching me struggle opening because it's a beautiful bottle, but it takes a little second to open it up. And I was able to open and pour and take a sip as you were talking. You did a great job. How important is it for you for the biodynamic and for the organic winemaking process?
I think it's fundamental in the future to be responsible citizen. Mm-hmm. And I think Canadians are showing the way in terms of your position on climate conditions, recycling, reusing, reducing waste. And I'm a huge proponent of all of that. And I think it's essential for all of us, if we granted land, to be respectful of land. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I feel organic and biodynamic must be the way of the future. Mm-hmm. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, we were cheering.
We were cheering the truffle.
And we're going to try the truffle now, maybe in this glass, Leanne.
In this glass, the black truffle.
Here, let me...
Here we go. The glasses, ladies and gentlemen, are getting empty. We're tasting, we're drinking.
Yeah.
Life could not be better.
Oh, God, no.
So I believe most of the vineyards should become organic. Mm-hmm. We should not have pesticides and herbicides. We need to really stop this craziness and really become responsible people.
How difficult will that be of an ask for, I mean, the smaller vineyards, maybe, I don't even know. That's a generalization on my part. How hard is that of an ask is that for both the tiny vineyard that's starting out and the giant ones from, you know, say your J-Lors of the world? Or
I think it has nothing to do with size. I think it has to be dealing with the commitment you have to Mother Nature. Mm-hmm. I think if you want to be a computer trader and trade stocks in a dark room, do that. But if you have the responsibility of Mother Nature, you got to be responsible and you got to commit.
Right.
My view, if I do what I do, I'm committed. It's not a matter of size. Even when we were very small, we moved into organic and biodynamic farming. It was very successful. And it allowed us to make better wines and to be true to the consumer. A wine which is organic is a true wine.
Absolutely.
So I think it's very important.
How long do you think it'll take before all these other wineries? Like, how long do you think it'll take before the majority of wine companies and wineries decide, you know, that they need to fully invest into that way of making wine?
Well, I think often regulation forces people to become what they should be. Mm-hmm. And I don't say that it should become the regulation to be organic, but I think it should be a regulation to be sustainable.
Should there be more incentives by local governments to help get these wineries
I think, Matt, you have the answer. We need to live in a responsible world. We need to stop to deviate. It's like food. Organic food, we know, is much more healthy than non-organic. And we know pesticides and herbicides are terrible for you. We know that. And those are molecules which gets in your body that creates all the illness we know. We know it. It's a fact. Yeah. We know it. So if we could minimize it or eliminate it is the way of the future. So I'm quite categorical in this topic because I think we allow too much deviation to the world we live in and we're not thorough enough. And to be perfectly frank, if I didn't believe in it, I would not do what I do.
Yeah.
What I do is the hardest way. Become organic and biodynamic is you take the biggest amount of risk.
Mm-hmm.
But risk is worthwhile in front of the responsibility of Mother Nature.
I was talking with one winemaker, Ann Sperlin. She makes wine for Southbrook here in Ontario, has a winery in Okanagan and one in Mendoza. And she was saying that it is a short-term risk and pain when you go fully organic and biodynamic and all that, but that it will eventually produce better quality grapes. So in the long run, it's actually better for the winery, even financially, if you can handle, you know, whatever, just the risks of the conversion.
Totally. Fully agree with you. Matt, I'm with you 100%. We got to become much more in this direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to incentivize people to do it. And again, I think we need to have a better realization of who we are as individual. If you commit to do something, do it with conviction and do it with passion and do it with a set of values, a set of ethics like you are. You're very prepared, very organized, very disciplined in what you do. And I would not want to deal with Mother Nature without being true to her.
Yeah.
And without being absolutely honest in front of the future generations to come. That's why I love the environment. That's why nature has been my best friends since birth. And that's why I'm very much into alternative energy. I'm very much into elimination of pesticides and herbicides, very much into water management. I'm very much into recycling, and I'm very much into reusing. Like all the spirits are reusable. You could use it as a carafe or water bottle or restaurant. If they use 10, have them use them even as a planter for beautiful flowers.
By the way, one thing you'll appreciate, I have one of the, you know, one of my decanters, you know, like the duck one, the long ones. I use that to fill to feed my Christmas tree.
Of course.
Because it's perfect. It can fill up with water and then it works well. It ducks under the bottom branches.
I thought you would say to feed the person laying in front of you and funnel wine in her or his throat.
Well, you know, there may be that as well. Okay. I'm curious about this.
Yeah, you did not elaborate on that girlfriend again with the concrete on the fire.
Her name is Amy, and I would say this. Her love of wine has certainly improved since we got together about 10 years ago.
Ooh.
To the point now where there's certain wines she doesn't like. And I'm like, oh.
And you're still together.
I have a philosophy, and I say this in almost every podcast.
I love it.
If you like everything, you love nothing.
Yes.
So I direct, much like, you know, with grapes and the energy from the vine, I love a bunch of things, but then there's a lot of other things I have to cut out in my life.
Yes.
So, you know, she's not the biggest Sauvignon Blanc fan, but that's fine because there's 400 other grapes. But what I wanted to get you with is...
Isn't it a great answer without answering the question?
Thank you very much.
Is he good?
I've been in...
I think you should run for first minister.
Oh, man, that's too much work. And also, you know, they dig up stuff on you. I don't need that.
Oof, oof.
When I travel around California, I find that so many of the, when you go to tasting rooms all across Sonoma, Napa, Russian River, wherever, so many of the wine owners or the people, you know, working in front of the house, they always say the same thing about their Pinot Noir. Oh, ours is very Burgundian. It's very Burgundian. We make our wines very Burgundian. To the point where it's almost like they're apologizing for being in Sonoma.
So much agree.
And there's a level of insecurity because everyone wants to be, you know, Chambertin. And I always want to just shake him and go, just be Russian River Valley.
That's right.
And I was wondering just your
thoughts
on that.
I love what you're saying. I'm going to introduce myself as Matt because I want to be Matt now. I'm going to do the same.
No. You got way better shoes than I do.
Well, I follow exactly what you say. This is why my saying... always to people, I'm in the Russian River to utilize the Burgundian winemaking techniques, to make California wines.
Ding, ding, ding.
And to your point, I'm shaking Matt's hands to congratulate him for that stand, because that's why I'm in the Russian River. That's why I'm in Sonoma Coast, because I want the flavor, the aroma to be California.
Yeah.
I want us tonight to have a Grand Cru Burgundy and a Grand Cru Sonoma that tastes totally different.
Yeah.
And I love the power of the flamboyance of the flavor, the ripeness of the grapes, be it. We use Burgundy techniques, but it's not a Burgundian-style wine. I disagree. It's not stylized after Burgundy. It's thought of Burgundy into making a local California wine.
For the listeners, because for this podcast, we've got the hardcore wine listener and also people that are just getting into wine.
Yes.
Could you explain to people what it specifically means when you say Burgundian technique?
Absolutely. So for all the listeners, we own one of the most allocated estates in Burgundy, Domaine de la Vougeray.
Yes, you do.
Bouchard Aîné et Fils and Ropito Frère as an example in Meursault. And why do I mention that? Because we have as well Deloge Vineyards in the Russian River.
Yep.
And of course, Buena Vista Winery, the oldest wine in Sonoma, making stunning Chardonnays and Pinot. So what does it mean to be Burgundian techniques and Burgundy-inspired, I always say, and use? We use, first, green harvesting in July, which means we take out the grapes that are not going to make it so that we feed better. Typical Burgundy techniques.
Yeah.
The grapes arrive, they're typically hand-picked, which is what we do in Burgundy, on a conveyor. We do hand sorting. Hand sorting is very Burgundian. So you eliminate the grapes, which are too green or not great. Mm-hmm. Then finally, we use an open-top fermentation. Whole cluster or destemmed.
Yep.
And that's really Burgundian.
Yes.
So it's an open-top vat. You could take a beautiful bath in it if you wish. A bath of wine so your skin will be forever soft.
There's an NBA player, Mari Stoudemire, that's done that. But anyway, continue.
Perfect.
Continue.
Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. You know, we should invite him because my wife always said, your legs are so soft, comes October. And, you know, I don't shave them, but if I did, can you imagine what she would say?
Even Ooh, softer.
Maybe I should try this year. And
just don't wax, that would hurt.
That's it, yeah. That's it. So, you know, Burgundy-inspired means we use open-top fermenter, long maceration program, and long fermentation, 26 to 30 days. Then we use phenomenal oak barrels coming from Burgundy. Mm-hmm. So that's a big deal. French oak barrels coming from the Vosges or the Limousin region
yep.
happen to be the best. So we follow a Burgundian tradition. But then the key is the technique you use. So on Chardonnay, you could do bâtonnage, which means you stir the lee. On the Pinot, you could do eventually egg white fining, which is another big Burgundy technique. So you break an egg white on top of the barrels. It takes all the clarification of it, and then you bottle the wine. So I believe what we do ourselves is follow all the techniques I just outlined as Burgundian techniques, but we want the wines to be purely juicy, exotic, opulent California, fresh and crisp and
yeah.
inviting and inspiring. And this is what California is about.
Absolutely. How boring would it be if I'm getting a Deloge, if I'm getting a Russian River Pinot and it tastes like Pommard? And listen, I could drink Pommard for the rest of my life.
And how boring if the world was only like you and I, blonde eyes.
Yeah.
Blue eyes with blonde hair.
Exactly. You need the you want the just the difference in wines.
So why do we have a collection of wineries all the way to California and Burgundy? Is because we like diversity.
Yeah.
The world belongs to diversity. Different religion, different skin color,
yep.
different flavor profile, different spices, different cooking techniques for food. This is why Indian food, look, we have an Indian wine I would love for you to try named Jainoon. Mm-hmm. It's a new joint venture we did in India, which is so exciting.
You're making wine at a joint venture in India?
The best of the best with Indian wines.
That's crazy. Do you sleep?
I hate
Do
it.
You
it's so overrated.
Ah, actually,
sleeping is overrated.
Old Jewish proverb, if you want your dreams to come true, don't sleep.
So I will become half Jewish then.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I believe that the less you sleep, the more inspired you are.
By the way, one quick note on the, and thank you for pouring
the Jainoon. So it's a Cabernet Sauvignon inspired wine.
What does that mean, Cabernet Sauvignon inspired? What's
well,
the
there's other varieties in it. Like Malvinzin and a few other amazing Merlot and Cabernet Franc as well, and a tiny bit of Sangiovese. And this is an amazing estate, magnificent estate we have next to Pune, the town of Pune in India. Mm-hmm. So we make this Cabernet based and a Chardonnay Sauvignon Blanc wine.
Yeah.
It's going to enter Ontario very soon. As you know, there's
The grapes are sourced from India.
Oh, for sure. Made in India, sourced in India.
I got to tell you, it's
the most high-end Indian wines you'll find, as the press has recognized as such so far.
It's a lot lighter than I expected.
Yes.
From the color, I was going and going, okay, and not in a bad way, this is going to be a little bit bigger, heartier, but this one's a little bit lighter than I thought.
We wanted to make a wine extremely drinkable with the food, extremely harmonious with the spice. Very important that it goes very well with saffron or marsala and all those great dishes coming from India.
Oh,
isn't
wow.
it great?
It is. It's really nice. And
Marsala is the predominant grape variety after Cabernet Sauvignon, which is a very old historical South of France grape variety.
Okay. You know, I got to tell you, when we were sitting down to do the interview, I did not expect to be trying some of these products.
Well, but we want you to discover a world you've never seen, Matt.
And your truffle vodka. Your truffle vodka.
That's what I'm still sipping on. I'm insanely in love with it.
It has the mushroom.
Ah, the mushroom. The magical mushroom.
The
hallucinogenic mushroom.
Yeah.
Which is the black truffle. So we just brought in 60 kilos of black truffle coming from the Southwest a month ago. They are macerating. Next week, I'm in Burgundy. I'm going to be trying it. And I cannot wait to tell you how soon it will be bottled, which is January. And it's going to be so good. And, you know, you can have it with pasta. You can have it as a martini. Mm. You can have it as a cocktail.
Yeah.
Yesterday, people served me a Clamato, which is very Canadian.
Yes, it is.
Clamato Bloody Mary. And it was bloody good.
I want to go back. You mentioned about the Burgundian technique. It's all about hand-picked. So 1999, you talk about when you made two wines, your Clos de Vougeot Blanc and your Le Monti Rouge. And you said, we destemmed by hand every single berry we put in the vat by hand. Take me back that to 1999. How tough is that? Like, just people don't realize this, but what is the physical labor of that?
So it was amazing because we have this Grand Cru named Musigny. Mm-hmm. We make 900 bottles of it. It's the most allocated wine on the planet.
Yeah, it is.
It's one of the most expensive as well.
Yeah, it is.
And the cost comes into the label we put in. So we wanted to destem it fully. So we took the actual stalk, berry after berry. We took them out in a little basket. And gently, we poured the basket in the vats as we destem everything by hand. 20 of us were in a circle, saying jokes, having a great time. It was a three-hour process. And we treated them like caviar.
Yeah.
And every berry was gently put in the vats, and we let them ferment, meaning convert from the sugar to the alcohol. It was one of the most amazing, exhilarating, an historical experience that I've ever lived. I loved every moment of it.
And that was, you know, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about your sister. Because
how important is
your sister to the production?
Phenomenal.
And everything that you do in Burgundy.
So my sister is a few years older than I am, has been a great inspiration, has been an amazing lady, and has been one of my greatest friends as well. Obviously, we've had the pleasure to create a lot of things together, including that estate, Domaine de la Vougeray, and the experience you just mentioned. So her and I decided to create Domaine de la Vougeray. Vougeray is the house her and I were born into Vougeot.
Yep.
And it was the house of my parents, which had been known Vougeray for centuries. And we said, let's create the estate, which will become the greatest accomplishment we've done together. So in 1999, we brought the 52 hectares together. Musigny, Corton Charlemagne, Bâtard Montrachet, Corton, Clos Vougeot, Bonnemare, Charme Chambertin, I mean, you name it.
These are the Hall of Famers. These are the celebrities. These are the celebrities.
And we created that estate based on the principle of organic and biodynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And we're pleased to tell you, as you know, you have it here as well. Has become one of the most successful estates in the world of Burgundy. Why, I think? Because her and I had the objective to create the best, a great sense of excellence, the ultimate, and the most, you know, flamboyant, incredible, true to nature, true to terroir, true to the village wines of Burgundy.
And you are you still the largest wine producer in Burgundy?
You know, we like large, but we like to say lead.
Yeah.
Leading, because we do a lot of innovation, mm-hmm. and we're very passionate about this.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Well, again, fantastic for that. What does the hardest vineyard, or excuse me, the hardest vintage, what does that look like? What is the day in the life when the hail has hit?
Oof.
What is the, okay, we'll just go with hail, because one of the biggest problems, obviously, with Burgundy, we've seen it,
yes.
Large Premier Cru vineyards getting wiped out by it.
I remember forever when my daughters were just born, it was 5 years ago, we are in Burgundy, they're 2 years old, working out outside at the end of May, and suddenly they see pieces of ice falling from the sky. And it's bouncing on the ground. So I put ice buckets and I said, let's get ice and collect ice. And it sounds crazy. It was dramatic. It was sad because hail goes through the leaf, broke every single vineyard, and was very destructive. It was a bombing. It was like Hiroshima.
Yeah.
It was like a nuclear weapon falling into the region. And it was very sad and very emotional because we lost 80% of the harvest.
Oh.
However, you know, there's always better days. I think the hard days allows you to enjoy the good ones. This year was an amazing harvest, 2018. We had a full, complete harvest in every different vineyards. And it's going to be on top of it, not only great in volume, but great in quality. So it's very unusual to live such moments. So I think hail is like one of the most dramatic moments of life. When it comes, it's sad, but then it gives us pleasure in the good times.
We are right now in the LCBO.
Guest coming into the lounge.
People walking in.
Please come and taste wine.
Yeah, of course.
Don't be shy.
No one should be shy. Actually,
look at that. You need to welcome people with open arms. Just look out and smile and they come.
Sean, actually, that's a perfect segue because we're getting near the end of this interview, even though I could go on with you for ages.
I have all the time you want. And I want you to try this amazing Buena Vista Napa Valley
I would love
Cabernet.
If you want to pour, I will ask my question incredibly slowly. And by the way, I've never tried wine from India before. Incredible. And very light. By the way, what people should know is, I'm sitting here with one of the greatest Burgundy producers, but how does he open the wine? With his teeth. How do you open the how do you get the cork out?
Yeah, we wanted to aerate the wine, and I pushed the cork too much in.
We do it all the time.
I didn't have any tools. My hand was not strong enough. So what do I use? My lips and my teeth.
We do the same thing.
So you're trying 100% Napa Valley, mm-hmm. 26 months of age in new French oak barrels.
Yep.
So it's a very powerful cab, 2015 vintage, one of the best we've ever produced. And Buena Vista was the father and mother of Napa Valley. They started in Sonoma and then planted the first vineyards in 1861 in Napa. So this is the hell of a wine. This is one of the biggest seller at around $70, $80 on the shelf. And one of my favorite wines we produce in Napa Valley.
For under $100, that's excellent. And
thank you.
Here's what I'll say about this wine, and then I want to get to you. I want to talk about making wine less intimidating. But one of my earlier interviews was with Tom Eddy. And Tom Eddy makes beautiful, delicious mountain fruit Napa Cabernet Sauvignon.
Yes.
And the hardest thing to do is to get that balance between power and finesse. Because a lot of Napa Cab, it'll smack you, and the first half second you're enjoying it, but after that, it can just become too big fruit bomb.
Agree.
And there's no elegance. And more importantly, there's no freshness.
Agree.
How do you create power and freshness? And that's really what you want from your Napa cab. And I mean, this fella right here, absolutely.
Well, in the picking and in the time when you pick it, it's very important to really manage, the fruit.
When do you pick?
Well, early enough, when the Brix level is not too high and the ripeness is not too strong or too intense. So I think we have the expression, Matt, a great wine is made in the vineyard. It's very true. And I think we tend to really do that well because we monitor vineyards more than anything else. The second thing I would say, it's like when you make a sauce and you make a reduction.
Yeah.
The best reduction are over 48 hours. If you do a wine sauce and you want to make it too fast, 6 hours is not enough. 12 is better.
Yeah.
As you know, 18 is the best. The best chef would tell you, my sauce is 24 hours. And it's true. With wine, you want long maceration and fermentation. I like, personally, 60 days. Pinot, I like 26 to 28 days. Cabernet, 60 days. So you get refined, elegant, soft tannins, well-integrated tannins, and freshness.
I'm going to grab a... By the way, I am going to grab a bottle or two of this before I leave.
Oh, for sure. And I want to make sure you try the JCB, which is the passion, the ultimate Bordeaux blend. This is what we're really promoting this weekend.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. We gave a small allocation of around 30 cases, 360 bottles, to the LCBO, only exclusively promoted in this store. Mm-hmm. And this is what we want our guests to enjoy, the JCB passion.
How do you, or what advice would you give? Because a lot of people, when they come to the LCBO, you get nervous if you're new into wine.
Yes.
Because there's so many options, countries. And in France, you need to know by looking at the label what the grape is
for sure,
without the grape being on it. And one of the themes of this podcast, what I want to do is I want to make wine more approachable,
yes,
more fun,
yes,
make it less intimidating. Because totally wine agree. Is supposed to be fun. As we said off the top, it's an experience, it's a story, it's something to enjoy. What advice would you give to people that are getting into wine to calm them down. But to make it easier for them to start their journey into wine.
So what I would recommend first is to get our book, Passion for Wine, mm-hmm, because it's a very simple book. You're going to get a copy of it today, where we learn how to taste wine through your own words. So the key is to go into every country, buy a few bottles, and take notes of what you like. Life is about what you like, you should drink because I tell you should drink it. So I think to be audacious, to be experimental, and to dare. And within daring, to do your own notes, to keep your notes, and to go where you like, but to be audaciously adventurous and mm-hmm try everything you can on the face of the earth. I drink and taste over 150 to 200 wines a week.
Yeah.
I'm very proud to tell you, often there's weeks I do 500 wines.
Woo.
Because I love to taste the diversity. I love to learn.
Yeah.
You know, and often, to make everybody feel comfortable here, the more you taste, the less you know. And that happens to me often, it's the less I know because I taste so much.
It's so true. There's so much to learn about wine.
It's a humble experience.
It's so humbling.
Keeps you in line.
It's ridiculous.
It's like when I was a bachelor going to nightclubs and having women saying no to me. It's very humbling and it's a good experience. So
yeah,
it's the same with wine. You never know what you're going to experience and you never always know blind how to recognize your children. Many people say, Jean-Charles, try this. And I don't recognize the wine. It was a wine I made.
Ah, really?
Oh, yes. I get cornered all the time.
Wait a minute. They pour you your own wine, yes, and you're like, you have no idea.
I like it, and I say this, and that, and I open it, and I unveil it, and
Hold on, wait.
One of our wine.
Have you ever been poured your own wine and gone, nah, this isn't very good? Has that ever happened?
It has. Everything happened to me, and people set me up, and I love it. Make sure you finish the Buena Vista. It's easy for you.
Yeah. By the way, it's so, like, and this is not me just being nice because, because I'm here with you. But it's so drinkable. That Buena Vista, usually, when I think of, like, you know, it's still, that's a, like 15. That's a very young Napa Cab. But yet it's not tight. I'm not getting blocked by anything. That 15 Buena Vista. And he said for around mid-70s. And yes, mid-70s, it's a lot of money for wine. You don't drink this on Tuesday night. But this
but
is
maybe
a,
Monday night.
Maybe Monday, yeah, because, you know, you're like, oh, God, how do I get through the week? But if you're, you know, for a special event, you can open this 15. You don't even need to decant it for like 3-4 hours.
That's right.
Yeah.
You can enjoy it. And the wine you just have now is JCB Passion.
Yep.
Very seductive, very opulent, dark colors. A wine which I think spontaneous, alluring, and transcendental.
Yeah.
As it says on the bottle. It's all about the lusciousness, the dashness, and the rebelliousness of this wine. Why? Cabernet, Merlot, Cabernet Franc, and a little bit of Petit Verdot, the perfect Bordeaux blend.
Yeah, Bordeaux blend. So Cab first, what's the
first,
blend?
Cab Franc second.
Yeah. Is it and Cab? Is it more
it's
than 50?
It's a secret I would have to tell you.
All right.
But Cab
fine.
Is more than 50.
Okay,
yes,
that's fine.
Yes,
that's, that. Yes. You know what? Perfect.
It's
that's a great
conduit.
Answer.
It's yeah. very similar to one of the top, whether it's a Cheval Blanc or Latour, Cab is predominant, but then you move into something else. I wanted to make a wine here which show Bordeaux a certain level of sensuality from California. People think it's always powerful and big. This is elegant and refined and sophisticated.
You know what I love? Here I am talking with Jean-Charles Bosset, Burgundy, you know, from Burgundy, and we've now tried a bunch of Bordeaux blends and three different types of vodka. I like, you know, I like the range in you.
Absolutely. We got to be creative and we got to travel together.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'd love to. Working with John Legend.
Yes.
I'm sure you get asked 100 times, but just you worked with him because he wanted to make a to have a wine label or make a wine. I was just wondering.
Yeah, we became very close friends. And John and Chrissy has been coming to see us at Raymond Vineyards. Mm-hmm. You know, Raymond is one of our winery in the heart of Napa.
Yep.
And he loved Raymond. He collected Raymond for years. And he said, Jean-Charles, I want to make a wine. And I said, John, you should stick to music. Stick to music, and I stick to wine. I said, let's make wine together. So one time we're in our magnificent red room, which is a whole velvet room, in the heart of Santa Elena, which is the beautiful, iconic town of, you know, Napa Valley. And we crafted this wine, which was amazing. And he kept going back to his piano, drinking, playing the piano, drinking, and improving the wines. We loved it.
Oh, yeah?
That evening, all of us, we drank it. The next day, we got up and said, let's join venture on it and make a wine. So we created LVE together, Legend Vineyard Exclusive. And we'd love eventually to launch it here in Canada. We haven't been proposed to do that by the LCBO, but we hope it comes. So we could have John Legend come to Ontario and obviously sell and promote our beautiful Cab, which is a blend of Rutherford and Santa Elena, which is an $85 bottle of wine.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
Man, if you can, because it's hard. If you can make a good California cab for under 100, that's sort of the sweet spot. Because there's so much that's well over 100, then it's hard for people to get it, and also psychologically.
Absolutely,
as well.
And we're so bullish about it. You cannot imagine why. Because we really feel with John, we've created five wines which are amazing. So we have a Napa Cab, a red blend from Napa, a Napa Chard. Chardonnay, an amazing, spectacular, sparkling wine rosé from France.
Yeah.
And a Provence rosé as well. So five wines total.
First off, I'm glad we're still here. We're about 50 minutes in. And I have to say, no one from your staff is like, okay, wrap it up. Which I have to say to the staff,
well, they usually
you.
Come with a whip.
Yeah.
It's a whip of a chain, leather, and sometimes, you know, metal. Because they like to hurt my skin.
Yeah.
With like violence.
Delicate.
And, but tonight they've decided to be delicate and charming. You see two beautiful ladies. This is Leanne and Ingrid. And they've set up this whole beautiful room so charming.
It looks great.
We have our jewelry. We have our candles. We have our perfume. We have our book, which we're going to sign for you.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to try to wrap this up soon because I'm monopolizing your time. Are you?
I'm all yours. We have all the time you want.
What concern do you? No, I am near done. And just telling everyone who's handling for you, I am near done because, Jean, you're going to be way nicer. But also, I work in the world of media, so I know people got schedules. What concern do you have that Burgundy becomes harder for people to get into because it's the scarcity of it? It's not, you know, just you don't make a lot of wine. Like Bordeaux makes thousands and thousands and thousands more cases
Correct.
Per year than Burgundy. It's just a fact of life.
Yeah, Bordeaux is 12 times bigger than Burgundy.
Yeah, 12 times. Mm-hmm. Do you ever worry about that Burgundy is going to just get, it's only going to be sold to a smaller and smaller percentage of the population just because?
Well, you could be afraid of that at the same time, which is so exciting, mm-hmm. is Burgundy is a very open-minded region.
Yeah.
The younger generation has traveled all around the world and want more consumer for the right reason. So why I'm so excited about it, Matt, is, you know, we allocate a lot of wine for the 21 to 45-year-old who were not drinking wine and part of our list before, and now we allocate them wine. So I think the Burgundian are very conscious and loyal to the generations that have been buying their wines, and they're very consistent. So I think Burgundy is still approachable because you have the Côte Chalonnaise, which makes wonderful wines that are affordable.
Yep, that's a good, yeah, no, that's
it's
a good point.
It's not about where I live, which is Côte de Nuit, Côte de Beaune, the most expensive and the most illustrious. It's as well about Chablis, which is approachable. It's about Northern Burgundy, which is approachable. And obviously the Côte Chalonnaise, which is magnificent.
And you know, that's a great point. For people listening, go to Côte Chalonnaise, Rouilly, Givry.
Givry, Mercure, yeah. You know, Saint-Véran. But look, today we tasted together number 21 and 69, the two sparkling wine, the JCB we make. Only $25 a bottle.
It's fantastic.
And this is the essence of Burgundy. So a person without having necessarily all the means to buy a Grand Cru could still get into the world of Burgundy, enjoy amazing wines, as you could see.
Yeah.
And of course, have a great time. So I think it's not just about price points. I think, you know, the more people try it early, the more they get acquainted to it, and the more they can reserve those bottles of wine and be friends with the vineyard owners or with the stores and get their allocation.
Yeah. And
I would suggest finally for people to keep wine at home, to really collect wine and keep wine and have wine in your cellar.
And hide it.
Exactly. And not hide drink it all right away.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. The wines we had, you know, the Bonavista, your JCB.
That can age 10, 15, 20 years.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And
we'll be young in 20 years. We'll be babies.
Of course we will. And, yeah, you know, it's a good point. Start with the Côte Chalonnais or, you know, some of the northern parts and find some good, well-made village-level Burgundies. And eventually, as you get older, if you get a little bit of money, you don't got to buy four cases of Premier Cru, but buy two or three bottles.
You're exactly
and
right.
For a anniversary, for a birthday, for Christmas, for New Year's. I mean, it's been a while since we started this interview, me talking about a Premier Cru Corton that I had. I still remember today. And, you know, it wasn't cheap, but it wasn't a $500 bottle. It was still early hundreds. And I still remember it, you know, a year from now.
And we make, you know, I would suggest to people to really go into a very nice Burgundy Pinot and a Burgundy Chardonnay.
Yeah.
People should not just go for the most expensive. You can have a lovely wine at $25 to $30 as well.
Yep.
It doesn't have to be thousands of dollars a bottle. I think people need to venture. They have this idea of Burgundy being so expensive, but it's not that crazy. You can find a good bottle of wine for $35, $40.
Jean, I'm going to end this now. I hope to some point in the future interview again, but what
I would love to.
What I love about you is just your journey into wine starts with your grandparents and the French Resistance.
That's it.
And it goes from there all the way to you making wine in India.
That is
a hell of a journey.
Thank you. Thank you.
Jean.
And all countries need to be recognized for what they can do well.
Yeah.
And I think India belongs to that. And I think life is a journey. Matt, life is a theater.
Absolutely.
We all actors on it.
Yeah.
We all here for a short play.
I know.
Let's have a good one.
Thank you so much. Perfect way to end this. Thank you for everyone for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with the Interesting People podcast. You can find the podcast on Audio Boom, Stitcher, iTunes, wherever good podcasts are sold. Take care.
Matt is the best.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.